This is a special edition of Talk of Iowa, the Best of Iowa Archives, Part 1. Since early in 2007, we've been tracking down rare recordings that represent Iowa's heritage and culture through sound. In the coming hour, you'll hear audio clips that bring Iowa's history to life. We'll play actual recordings from a daredevil act at the state fair, sacred songs from the Omaha Indians dating back to 1895, and an Iowa reporter's eyewitness account of a World War II prison camp. Also, Nikita Khrushchev's gift of music from his 1959 visit to Iowa, songs broadcast for the first time. Lots of other surprises, too, coming up on Talk of Iowa. Welcome to a special edition of Talk of Iowa. I'm Rick Fredrickson with the Best of Iowa Archives, Part 1. The first stop on our historic sound expedition is the place that was in the news during the floods of 2008. The site of the old Riverview Amusement Park in Des Moines was inundated once again. In its heyday, Iowans came from all across the state to enjoy family fun at Riverview Park. Most, but not all, of the sounds are gone now. We premiered the Iowa Archives Project from Riverview Park in 2007. This sound has been preserved. It's an original recording of the steam engine whistle on the miniature train ride here on the old site of Riverview Park in Des Moines. All that's left of Riverview today is the original flagpole and ruins. The crumbling Tunnel of Love meanders through the brush at what is now a Kiwanis Club nature area. Riverview survived floods, fire, the Depression, and World War II, but was finally brought down by competition. It was Iowa's Coney Island with temptations galore. The clamor of the arcade was overpowered by this laughing, life-size mechanical clown. Younger kids were sometimes so traumatized they burst into tears.
Well, I think it was probably very low tech compared to what we see now.
Jim Underwood was a frequent visitor.
We could get in for 5 or 10 cents, and you'd buy a roll of tickets, and it would only cost less than a dollar, and you could spend most of an evening there having lots of fun.
The wooden roller coaster was legendary, a spirited ride with tales of death, heart attacks, and a suicide leap. But the thundering sound with screaming passengers has been lost. This computerized recreation posted on a Riverview website accurately portrays that first steep climb and the plunge into weightlessness.
They had a small train down there on the Riverview, and the squealing of its whistle was just romantic, and getting on that and riding around and the smell of that train as it burned coal and threw cinders back on you. It was an exciting time. And the Chris Crafts, that was a romantic thing to get on a speedboat back in those days. That was long before any of us had a boat of our own, and we would run around the lagoon on that, and I was always disappointed when that loop, it was like in a circle eight, figure eight that ended. I was always disappointed that the ride was over.
A premier venue for music and dancing was situated on the waterfront. 1,000 people would crowd into the Riviera Ballroom for sock hops, square dancing, and the jitterbug. The Everly Brothers and Smokey Robinson and the Miracles performed here. So did all the big bands, Duke Ellington, Glenn Miller, and Lawrence Welk. This old sound clip is from a radio broadcast more than a half century ago.
And now back to music here from the Riviera, the much-requested St. Paul Waltz.
Three years after Riverview closed in 1978, the Riviera Ballroom burned down. The song is The Cuckoo Bird Calls by the Fedorova Sisters, a pop recording group in the Soviet Union during the 1950s. It was one of dozens of selections that Premier Nikita Khrushchev brought to Iowa as a gift during his memorable visit in 1959. It would be nearly a half century before the existence of the music collection was made public. It was a national story, and Iowa Public Radio was first to broadcast the recordings in what we call the Khrushchev Collection. Iowans were building bomb shelters when the leader of the communist world dropped in for a visit, a global news story covered by CBS.
This is the voice of Russian Premier Nikita Khrushchev, a voice which became familiar to Americans in the fall of 1959 when he and his family spent 13 days touring the United States. In this angry speech, Khrushchev is saying the alternative to his disarmament plan is war.
Des Moines residents waved as the Khrushchev motorcade took the Soviet leader to Coon Rapids to see the Garst farm. At the cattle lot, Roswell Garst had to corral hundreds of reporters.
Now, you fellas, wait a minute. I cannot let you in the cattle lot because if I let you in the cattle lot, we wouldn't have any cattle.
It was right in the heart of the Cold War, and here we had a man in Iowa named Roswell Garst who thought we had some common ground with the Soviets, especially in terms of agriculture.
Mary Bennett, with the State Historical Society in Iowa City, found herself reflecting on that day a few months ago when a package arrived at her special collections office.
Well, this is a set of record albums. If you could see this in person, you'd see that it's covered in sort of a green velveteen, and it has a blue binding, but right smack dab in the middle is a Russian flag with a hammer and sickle on a red field and a shaft of wheat.
Premier Khrushchev had presented then-Governor Herschel Lovelace and his wife with the gift of music, a set of 20 record albums. Former First Lady Amelia Lovelace, now living in Virginia, has donated the collection to Iowa.
They're still in their original case. They're in mint condition. They're just being slid out of these sleeves for the first time. And as we slide out each of these 78 records, we'd find out, although we cannot read it because it's in Russian, that it's mostly things like classical music or the national Russian or Soviet chorus of that era. Immediately you time travel when you hear this music because of the qualities and the culture, the folk art that's reflected in the sound recordings here. We've had one record out to play on our turntable here, but I think really this is an unveiling to all Iowans when you play this music today.
For months after we first discovered the Khrushchev collection, we had the record labels translated and talked with musicologists and national experts on the Soviet Union, including Khrushchev's son who was with him in Iowa. What were the Soviets trying to say by giving us a box of recordings? Their analysis in part two of the Best of Iowa Archives. Two of Iowa's most distinguished artists have left impressive legacies, and that includes some irreplaceable audio recordings. Within earshot of the Iowa State University Carillon, fine art is on display in abundance, including works from Christian Peterson and Grant Wood, friends who at one time worked side by side. 46 years after his death, sculptor Christian Peterson is being honored with a new museum bearing his name here on the ISU campus where he was the nation's first artist in residence. In a tribute on WOI-TV in 1961, Peterson, who was born in Denmark and learned his craft on the East Coast, said that he settled in Iowa for artistic freedom.
And I've always tried to go my own way to bring that to the farmers here where we could start a culture. I've always maintained if we wanted to have a true American art, it had to start in the Midwest.
Collectors and museums, including the Smithsonian, hold around 1,300 of Peterson's creations, 900 at Iowa State, where he was on the faculty.
His legacy is of a beloved teacher. People think forget that he was a popular teacher, and he was a teacher that allowed social interaction within his classrooms as well as just academic interaction.
Lynette Pullman is director of museums.
We know that over 80 people met and then married, having met in his classes.
Peterson's own wife, Charlotte, was a partner in his professional life, too.
The thinking process is very long. He worked very rapidly when he started to work. But the thinking process was a different thing, the getting it together. No, he was a very, very, very sensitive person.
Peterson's most visible accomplishments are the Fountain of the Four Seasons and the Gentle Doctor, both at Iowa State. But his most important interpretation, according to the artist himself, was his last.
This is the Fisher Community Center in Marshalltown. It is here that Christian Peterson's last statue will stand.
Down real deep, there was something he wanted to say. And so finally, he called me over to the studio one day, and he had this little clay sketch. And I said, honey, you've got it.
I have 1 8-foot figure there, holding aloft the child. I wanted to symbolize this generation, helping the next generation, so the child is looking into the future.
He truly believed that each generation lifted up the next generation, not only intellectually, but emotionally. It's called Dedication to the Future. It was his last work of art. He literally died 3 days after he signed his name into the clay.
Christian Peterson worked with fellow artist Grant Wood in the early 1930s. When Talk of Iowa continues, a study of Grant Wood through the eyes of his sister, Nan. The woman in American Gothic tells the story of a fire that nearly claimed their lives. And coming up later, graphic accounts from Europe by a famous Iowan who covered World War II. This is a special edition of Talk of Iowa, the Best of Iowa Archives, Part 1. We've been gathering and broadcasting historic Iowa audio since early in 2007, a virtual radio museum of sound. Some of these old recordings come from real museums. At the State Historical Society in Iowa City, we found two old cassette tapes dated 1976. They provide an extraordinary glimpse into the life of Iowa's most famous artist, Grant Wood.
Take it easy going up the stairs.
This popular tourist stop in Cedar Rapids is where Grant Wood painted American Gothic in 1930. Thousands of visitors have climbed these steps to see the studio and living quarters where the artist lived with his mother and sister Nan. It is the same stairway they used to escape a flash fire more than 70 years ago. Nan Wood described the panic in this old recording saved by the State Historical Society of Iowa.
We heard this terrible roar, and Grant opened the storeroom door, and the flames flashed out across the stairway, and that was the only way out.
Mm-hmm.
So he got Mother out, and then he tried to close the door to shut the flames off, and his shirt caught on fire, and it burned off to the shoulder, and his ear burnt, and part of his hair went. I got so scared that I threw the phone. And ran, and you had to run through these flames to get out. My hair caught on fire, and had his car here for a while.
Nan was interviewed by the late writer John Zug in a book collaboration about Grant Wood's life. She remembered his teaching career.
And the kids just worshipped him. And there was a little colored boy who was especially fond of Grant. And he saved up his money all year to buy Grant a Christmas present. And he said, "Mr. Wood, would you like a necktie?" And Grant was afraid it would be terrible, and that he'd have to wear it to please the kid, so I've forgotten what he bought him. I think it was a gold pen and pencil set. And they were very poor in pen and pencil sets in those days. Cost a lot of money, and Grant felt bad about it.
In addition to being Grant's biggest admirer, little sister Nan was the somber woman immortalized in American Gothic, the portrayal of a father and daughter, a pitchfork, and the perfect backdrop.
He was riding around with a friend, and they went by this house, and Grant saw it, and went back later. He kept thinking about that house. The breakfast one morning, his thoughts had gelled on what he wanted to do about it, and he explained it to Mother and I. He drew it on the back of an envelope. He didn't dream that he was offending the farmers about that painting.
With American Gothic, you mean?
Yes, but of course they got all over that when they found that I was the model.
To Grant, it wasn't even farmers.
No. It was a small-town man and his daughter.
It's doubtful there was any intent to ever broadcast this audio tape. At one point, perhaps the recorder was accidentally left on, Nan is at a reception. Her group is asked out to dinner, and Nan returns the favor.
And since you're coming back Friday, why don't you join us for dinner Friday night with Nan and Jim, his friends, if you're available?
Well, instead of you getting a meal, why don't I take you all out?
Nan died in 1990, 48 years after her brother. We're still hoping someone can help us locate a voice recording of Grant Wood. One of the first voices we featured in our archival project was that of George Vinton Graham. We found him at the Library of Congress.
This is a song that hasn't got any title, but it's something about an impossibility, I think. Where are you going to K3M? Green grows the Marion Tine. And if you see that nice young man, I want him for a true lover of mine.
In 2007, George Vinton Graham is an unlikely star with dozens of songs posted by the Library of Congress.
He shall be a true lover of mine. That's all I can recall now. I'll have to get a drink of water.
Graham must have been quite a character in Southern California, where he later lived. Ethnographer Sidney Robertson Cowell at the American Folklife Center had a cultural interest in preserving his Anglo-American music, ballads, and poetry.
As she was passing down the main, she met three vessels coming from Spain. I learned this song from my mother when I was about 7 years old. And I am a sailor boy. Oh, Captain, Captain.
Carl Captain King is a more famous Iowan in the music world. He became one of America's greatest composers. We are assisted in telling his story by sixth grader Kristen Holvick.
Mr. King was born in Paintersville, Ohio on February 21st, 1891. He was only 14 when he wrote his first march.
Our guest on the summer bandstand tonight is the composer of some of America's finest marches.
This 1950 broadcast is from NBC Radio in New York City.
Visiting us from Fort Dodge, Iowa, here is Mr. Carl King.
He moved to Fort Dodge in the autumn of 1920 and became director of the Fort Dodge Municipal Band.
Carl King and his Emblem of Freedom March.
11-year-old Kristen's class project in Fort Dodge spans the remarkable career of Carl King. His 300 compositions, band director for the Buffalo Bill Wild West Show and Barnum and Bailey Circus. He was also a fixture in Des Moines.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Iowa State Fair proudly presents the music of Carl King, the March King.
But you played at the Iowa State Fair.
38 years there, and there's where my old circus experience came in handy, because we played
all the acts in front of the grandstand.
WHO-TV interviewed King for his 80th birthday.
I never could decide which way to go on either writing or directing or on the show business angle or the concert. And the only way I could resolve them was by just doing a little of each, see.
Happy birthday, dear Carl.
Ole Olson was one of the Fort Dodge musicians singing Happy Birthday 36 years ago and still plays baritone with the band today.
I always said that there was nobody that was named more aptly because he had a regal bearing about him. He could walk into a room of the greatest band directors and things at a convention in Chicago, and he would just immediately command everybody's attention.
Spectators filled stadiums and town squares when Carl King was in town. In 1960, he conducted a record 13,000 musicians at the University of Michigan. A year later, fans in Oskaloosa showed their respect by cheering and honking their horns. In Fort Dodge, King was mayor of music. At a roast in 1966, the real mayor, Albert Hebb, seemed to acknowledge that.
I am not, by nature, a bass drum player, as Carl has brought to my attention any number of times.
I believe he was Fort Dodge's most famous citizen.
Little Kristen is now grown up. Before she could submit this report in 1971, her Carl King biography became an obituary. He died 10 days after she got the last interview with Iowa's greatest march composer.
What song that you composed was your favorite?
The one that I'm best known by. Most people are my dad, Barnum Bailey's favorite march.
The flags at many places were flown at half mast from the time of his death until he was laid to rest.
This rendition of Barnum and Bailey's favorite is played by the historic Carl King Municipal Band. After this break, Talk of Iowa continues with John Wayne. This is Talk of Iowa, and today we're featuring highlights from Iowa Public Radio's historic sound project, The Best of Iowa Archives, Part 1. To the movies now, with historic audio recordings of John Wayne like you've never heard him before. This episode aired in 2007, 100 years after his birth in Winterset. A cascading water sculpture is a busy place at Indiana University, just outside the Lilly Library, which houses rare books and collections. This is where memorabilia of movie giant John Ford are preserved, the director who brought John Wayne to prominence in this 1939 Western.
All aboard for Dry Forks, Apache Wells, Lee's Ferry, Lordsburg.
From the adventures of these American frontier characters, John Ford has created a truly great motion picture, Stagecoach.
It was a box office hit, and John Wayne starred as the Ringo Kid.
Well, it looks like you've got another passenger.
Yeah.
I'll take the Winchester.
You may need me in this Winchester, Curly.
1, 2, 3, 4. Five,
About 30 six, years ago, Dan Ford recorded a private conversation with Wayne for a book about his famous grandfather.
Though he was a private man, he was certainly articulate with that camera. And he told his feelings through people. I don't think that anyone in the business realized as much as he that the pictures are about people.
When the discussion turned to a controversial writer who had gone too far, Wayne rose to the defense of his family.
He talked about my family. He didn't know anything about my family. He talked about my mother in a brash way. He said that they were only married 6 months before I was born. Well, Madison County, Iowa, raised up in...
The tape ends here, then continues.
I have two choices. I can go kick his teeth down his throat or not pay any attention to him. So I decided not to, because he'd sue me anyway, probably. But if my mother had still been alive, I'll guarantee you she'd have horsewhipped him down the main street.
The real John Wayne sounded a lot like the old marshal he played in True Grit, a 1970 performance that won him an Oscar, the winner announced by Barbara Streisand.
The winner is John Wayne in True Grit.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm no stranger to this podium. I've come up here and picked up these beautiful golden men before, but always for friends. I was very clever and witty that night, the envy of even Bob Hope. But tonight I don't feel very clever, very witty. I feel very grateful, very humble.
The U.S. was leaving Vietnam when he recorded the album Why I Love Her, John Wayne at his patriotic best.
It has been more than 100 years since that sound was born, but those notes have never died away. Every night of the year, throughout the world, fighting men of America from the north and the south, the east and the west, close their eyes in sleep to its call. And in each of their hearts, there glows a fierce surge of pride.
Sleep in peace, comrades dear. God is near.
Broadcasters have been a rich source of old recordings. Some of the most dramatic go back to World War II, when pioneer radio reporters filed stories for Iowans back home.
Hello, NBC. I thought we were going to start a minute from the time I said. Maybe you didn't understand the signal.
The year is 1945, and the nation's first farm broadcaster is covering the war for WHO radio.
This is Herb Plambeck again.
Davenport native Herb Plambeck would file his censored reports by shortwave, transmitting from a military facility to London and then across the Atlantic. He was with the 7th Army soon after American tanks pulled up to Stalag 13D, where the Germans held 14,000 POWs.
My first impressions as our jeep wheeled up to the enclosure were the high, ugly barbed wire fences, ominous lookout posts, dismal barracks, drab gray tents, lack of sanitary facilities, the hated swastika, acres of filth, and the stench that went with it all, and the thin, now smiling men who have known deprivation, hunger, cold, and in many instances, disease and pain. From those confined up to 5 years, I heard almost unbelievable stories of abuse. Some spoke of 9 to 10 weeks of marching through snow and mud, with ill-fitting shoes, every step a torture, of the starvation diets, only a loaf of moldy black bread for 16 men for a 2-day period, supplemented only by thin soup, which, as one British Tommy put it, had 6 beans and 7 beetles to the gallon of water.
Planbeck's voice reports were recorded on heavy 16-inch discs and are stored with boxes of his paperwork in the archives of Iowa Broadcasting at Wartburg College. In several reports, Planbeck's agriculture background came into play.
Here in Germany, I must admit, I've been impressed by the gardening job they do, despite the indescribable destruction all about them. Sometimes in their own homes, flowers continue to be painstakingly cared for. Every garden has its border of tulips or pansies or other pretty flowers. Truly, it's hard to understand these people. Their flower beds so carefully planned and cultivated, and yet permitting fanatics like Hitler and Himmler to come into power.
Hello, WQV. This is MCH calling WQV.
A shortwave operator tries to establish a connection, illustrating the hurdles war correspondents faced in getting their reports home.
I'm sorry, but you are totally unintelligible.
In May of 1945, Planbeck sent this dispatch on the victory in Europe.
Speaking from Germany, on the evening of the glad day when the end of the war in Europe was announced to our men here. This is another of those occasions when mere words cannot tell the full story. The story we've waited so long to bring you, and the one you've waited so long to hear. Undoubtedly, a great many of you have already uttered prayers of gratitude, just as many of your boys and the rest of us have in this part of the war-weary world.
After returning to farm broadcasting in Iowa, Planbeck covered the Vietnam War and worked for the U.S. Agriculture Secretary before his death in 2001. The original Planbeck recordings are held at the Archives of Iowa Broadcasting, where Jeff Stein is administrator.
Welcome. Welcome to the Archives of Iowa Broadcasting, located at Wartburg College in Waverly.
From KCRG in Cedar Rapids.
It's time for Johnny Kettleson and the Sunshine Boys. 30 minutes of music brought to you by the Hubbard Milling Company.
It's a collection of the history of radio and television in our state. But it's much more than that. It's really the story of the people of Iowa, as told by broadcasters throughout the last 100 years.
The virtual museum contains thousands of recordings on old 78s, film, and audio tape.
After one on the new Dick Youngs program. Now more winners, more often with more cash calls here on KIOA, the prize-winning station.
Generally, today at our terminal markets, cattle prices.
Earl May on KMA Shenandoah.
17.5%. Shenandoah markets bought butcher hogs at $17 per hundred, up 18%. Little or no increase.
We had 90-degree high. Down.
There was no radar in 1964 when WMT's Conrad Johnson stood before a simple map.
Situation. We had a 48 up at Bismarck, North Dakota.
And I used to have the magic mirror to look through.
This collection of radio and TV memories includes oral histories of Iowa broadcasters like Bonnie Noonan in Waterloo.
I'm here and I'm a good doobie.
And early tools of the trade. Jeff Stein is administrator.
This microphone was used on the very first broadcast from what is now WMT, some 85 years ago. This microphone was used for decades at WSUI in Iowa City.
The archive's founder is veteran broadcaster Grant Price.
The archive's holdings are in a secure, climate-controlled vault with a rotating collection of artifacts on display in the public research area.
Standard Oil and your local Standard Oil dealers and agents invite you to listen to the Standard Oil News Roundup, a service of WHO Hotline News.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Jack Shelley, and these are the headlines in the news this noon. U.S. Marines have scored an apparent victory over the Viet Cong. President Johnson is holding a news conference right now.
Betty Lou Varnum at the Magic Window on WOI-TV in Ames.
We're going to take time out and go to a warmer place by far, the riverbank. Ta-da! Turn on the motor and the light.
This is Dole trying to go over the top of...
Play-by-play from Frosty Mitchell and Mark Zellick when the tournaments were still at Vets Auditorium.
Court thrown away. Ooh, you saw Pratt right over the scorer's table.
United Flight 232, en route from Denver to Chicago, attempting an emergency landing at the Sioux City Airport, crashed just before...
Dave Nixon on KTIV in 1989.
New Center for photographers at the scene captured the video when the DC-10, making an emergency landing, crashed on approach to runway 22 turned over, and burned.
Beautiful day for baseball.
We'll share many more broadcasting memories, including the lovable Floppy, in the Best of Iowa Archives Part 2. The greatest show in Iowa has provided countless thrills and historic audio clips. Hold on as we turn the clock back on the Iowa State Fair.
Iowa News Flashes, Iowa's weekly newsreel. Newest and most watched thrill sensation along Carnival Row is the Loop Plane, designed for persons who like things topsy-turvy.
These old newsreels go back to the 1930s, when promoters put on grandstand shows that would never be repeated today.
In the quarter stretch, Captain Frakes gets ready for his airplane crash into a frame house. The smash hit of the week. A man's house is his castle, but not when the captain decides to sideslip in for a cup of tea. There he goes, up to his old tricks.
Take it away, Foster May.
On three occasions, Iowans came to see the head-on crash of locomotives, a sound recreated in a display at the Fair Museum.
Now, this is motion picture. This must be another train wreck.
This is the 1932 train wreck.
Bill Riley and George Mills were still talking about the spectacular crashes a half century later on Iowa Public TV.
The Roosevelt and the Hoover hit.
And they hit, and it was not only the ordinary explosion, but that was really enhanced by dynamite.
There were injuries, including Eloise Chin, who recounted the final crash 75 years ago in an interview on WOI Radio in 1996.
Anyway, I was standing by the fence, and when it exploded, there was a piece of the burning wood that came across and hit me on my arm. And it burned and it hurt, and I had to go to the first aid station and so forth.
Iowan Joe Conley, who staged these crashes nationwide, salvaged one of the old train bells, and it still rings today on the farm where he was born near Colo. In 1939, an Omaha TV station sent a crew to cover the crocheting contest.
Lyle DeMoss, our co-worker at WOW, was there to report the event and to interview the contestants. In this case, instantaneous recordings were made to be broadcast at a later date. Well, well, the one-hour crocheting race is on.
Hey, stop a minute. Hey!
In years past, there was a different kind of action on the Midway.
Hey, where the girls are. Hey, where the action is.
The burlesque show was innocent by today's standards. This carnival barker was filmed by IPTV in 1972, when eager young males got their first look at pasties.
Say, girls, slip into a little something. Come out here. It gets a little lonely out here by myself.
Television was introduced to fairgoers in 1946. Eventually, there was a radio TV building, and a popular Iowa music program was among the first performances.
It's time now for the Smokey Smith Show. Direct from the television center at the Iowa State Fairground, here's the popular star of our show, Smokey Smith.
Golly, it's nice to see all of you. And boy, have we got a crowd. I believe they're hanging from the rafters again today up there. I do believe. Get things underway. We're going to call on a couple of our boys over here, Garland Dye, the Pride of Carlisle, and Professor Ray Bush with their version of Bye Bye Love. Tell them.
Bye Bye Love. Bye Bye Happiness. Hello Loneliness. I think I'm a gold.
Now we listen to the oldest recordings we've found, dating back to the late 1800s. Sacred songs from the Omaha Indians who once lived and hunted across western Iowa. The music was recorded on wax cylinders. This recording was made in 1895. The performer's English name is James Robinson, who was born around 1811. The song, Ritual of the Maize, covers the life cycle of corn and the springtime distribution of sacred kernels of red corn. Elsie Gilpin Morris will soon be 85 and is deeply moved by the resurrection of the ancient Omaha music and the lifestyle it represents.
It's very special because I think everyone is curious about
just how things were the old days. That makes me feel sad.
This Hethushka grass dance song is from 1896. One of the singers is Francis LaFleche, the son of an Omaha chief and an ethnographer who made these wax cylinders, in collaboration with anthropologist Alice Fletcher. They worked together, making hundreds of Native American recordings, and she ultimately adopted him.
I think it's very, very important because I see it as a part of our identity.
Wainima Morris is a teacher and a member of the Omaha tribe.
And I think it's just makes up another aspect of who we are as who we are as Omaha people. It's as important as the language.
Women sang rally songs when warriors went out to protect their villages. This one was made 112 years ago.
Those would be like cheerleaders. It'd be to sing songs of you know, get out there, do your best, and of course come back, but be your bravest, don't be afraid of the enemy.
War songs featured high pulsating drums and dramatic action with warriors acting out combat.
Very stylized, very to convey emotion, and that's what ballet does. Basically, that would be the Indian ballet of bravery, courage, fear. And the war whoop at the end, it's just pure joy, pure happiness.
Most Iowans would not know that we have an Iowa flag song. It was adopted by the legislature in 1949 in a session that featured a live performance at the Statehouse.
Members of the House and Senate of the 53rd General Assembly.
The first baby boomers were just learning to walk when Governor William Beardsley went before a joint session of the legislature.
And I'm very happy at this time to introduce to you the poet laureate of Iowa, Mr. Ernest O. Osborne of Knoxville. Mr. Osborne.
A pharmacist by profession, the quaint philosopher recited his verse before the Iowa legislature and the U.S. Congress, including his partisan poetry.
Now I shall start out by telling you that I think I can qualify as a Republican.
While Governor Beardsley was also a Republican, Democrats had controlled the presidency for years, since Franklin Roosevelt defeated Herbert Hoover.
But not later than 3 weeks ago, I think it was, that I dreamed I went to Washington, D.C., to meet and greet the president and see what I could see. I dreamt I walked 100 miles and knocked on every door, but not a soul bade me come in. No wonder I was sore. I was about to rave and rant and give up in despair when the sweet voice of Eleanor said, "Won't you have a chair?" Since I was weary, worn, and tired with gratitude, I wept, quite mindful she could change her mind before I could accept. I thanked her in a kindly way and said, "Dear Eleanor, it seems to me the Democrats are guarding every door." She pointed to my coat lapel. The light began to dawn. Lo, what a fool I found I had a Hoover button on.
Osborne had also written the words for a song dedicated to the designer of the Iowa flag, Dixie Gephardt. A contest was held to compose a tune that schoolchildren could sing, and Osborne liked Esther Clark's the best.
I should like to present the composer of the music, Esther Mae Clark of Oskaloosa.
She donated these recordings to the State Historical Society. The Iowa flag song was then performed, vocals by Mrs. Lyle Mitchell of Oskaloosa.
Flag of our home, flag of our soil, the land that we adore, Iowa land, beautiful land.
Today, the Iowa flag song is not entirely forgotten, but rarely heard, even though a resolution made it an official song of the state on March 24, 1949. This has been a special Talk of Iowa, the Best of Iowa Archives, Part 1. I'm Rick Fredrickson. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa are available at iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by Dan Knight. Talk of Iowa is a production of IPR.